Welcome into Tar Heel Talk here on 97.9 FM, 1360 AM WCHL. I'm Blake Hodge, of course, Ross Martin from Carolina Blue, 24-7 Sports, CBS Sports, and WCHL's own Avery Trendle, as we have got a lot to talk about. It's that great time of the year, football, basketball, both going on at the same time. It was also the signing day for the early signing period, so we'll talk a little bit about the UNC basketball 2017 class, and of course, we'll lean on Ross a lot during that segment to tell us about what is now a four-person recruiting class for the Tar Heels. But before we get into all the basketball, I know everybody's eager to do that because they've gotten off to a really strong start so far. Unfortunately, we do have to go back to last Thursday and think about football for just a couple of minutes here. UNC goes to Durham. All the hype before the game, the victory bell's been painted this split color. It's half Carolina blue, half Duke blue. Nas Jones tweets from the store where he's already about to buy spray paint cans. Bubba Cunningham tweets before the game that he's changed his mind and he's going to let them paint it up. The key to that, the key to painting, you have to win the game. And this one, 28-27, Duke comes away with the victory. After so many games this season where we've seen Carolina come back, get a victory whenever they were down, facing adversity, it just didn't seem like we saw the same Mitch Trubisky, Avery, in this game. Coming down the stretch in particular, after that really hot start, they got up 14-0 right off the bat, just couldn't get it done down the stretch.
And that was the thing with Trubisky. He came out hot with those first two drives. They went 70 yards, 96 yards, had the two touchdowns. He came out hot, but you go back to what you're saying beforehand where they're talking about you're going to paint the bell before, the game, and then you realize that they think they've already won. And so when you get up 14-0 like that, I think Fedora said it best in his press conference. They got frustrated as Duke started to come back, and they never really seemed to find their rhythm after Duke scored those three touchdowns in the second half. Nothing seemed to click. Everybody's talking about, did Elijah Hood get enough touches here or there? I think that it was more of an overall team thing that they just got frustrated. I don't think Trubisky played particularly bad. Obviously, the interceptions in the second half, the last drive, those were crucial. That was what decided the game, but I just don't think it was all Trubisky.
Yeah, and then I think, Fedora said it, they just didn't execute. They were the better team out there. They just didn't make the plays. They didn't catch balls on third down. They threw the ball in front of the sticks. Mitch Trubisky looked a little off. The defense couldn't contain their quarterback, and it was a huge miss opportunity. And Trubisky said that after the game. He said it was a miss opportunity. He doesn't say much after losses, doesn't say much in general, but I mean, there's not much silver lining after this loss. UNC was favored by like a 10.5 points on the road. Duke was 0-5 in the ACC. It was a rivalry game. Again, all the stuff with the victory bell. And just they got a little overconfident, scored easily. And then after that, Fedora said it on Monday, they kind of let off the gas and thought this was going to be easy. I think the intensity was really lacking and not containing the quarterback, not getting the Duke offense off the field. And then not execute on their offense really told the story.
That was even frustrating to watch. So I can't imagine being involved in that, of just seeing the same thing from the Duke offense, of that read option and then the quarterback, the freshman Jones there, able to continuously get big chunks of yards there against the Tar Heel defense that had been making a lot of improvements, it seemed like, over the last couple of weeks. It just wasn't translating into that. Even you had other games like against Georgia Tech where, UNC said going into the game, we heard from Shaquille Rashad and Jeff Schottmer that they didn't make adjustments before. They just, last season against Georgia Tech, they said it the same thing this week, didn't make any adjustments against Georgia Tech. And it seemed like they didn't make any against Duke either, but they also weren't able to just elevate their level of play like they had been.
They could not contain that quarterback, and that was really the big deal in offense. He just kept running for first downs or, 5-10 yards each time. And, not to dwell on this loss too much, a loss is a loss. UNC has two games left. But we asked Nas after the game, what does it feel like now with the ACC championship hopes kind of out the window? Mm-hmm. And he said, that goal is scratched off. We have a very, very slim chance of winning the Coastal now. Can't blame them with themselves. He was kind of, they're very down about this because after last year's big season, 11 wins, undefeated at home, 8-0 in the ACC, and then losing this game, and Virginia Tech, you know, ahead of them, and even Virginia Tech loses.
Yeah, right.
But still,
and even Mitch said this on Monday. Of course, they lost.
I mean, it's incredible.
I think everybody at that point, at least the thought had crossed their mind of, well, you can about bet all your money on Georgia Tech this week to go and knock off Virginia Tech. I mean, the season for football, for the goals that they originally set at the beginning of the year, are virtually dead at this point. They didn't win the state because you already lose to Duke. You still have a chance to beat state coming up. But the coastal championship, unless Carolina wins out and then Virginia is also able to beat Virginia Tech, is just certainly starting to stack up against them. And looking to next season, don't know what the makeup of the team is going to be, but this certainly seemed to be a year that Carolina really needed to capture the moment here and capitalize on what they had, because if things fall a certain way, you know, there's so much hype around Mitch, and with the way that Elijah has played over his 3 years, you don't know what their status is going to be. So many guys that were senior impact players, it's going to be a very different looking team next year in general. So I thought this year, if you're going to continue this program, momentum was the year that it had to get done.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at last year's team, they brought back so many of those players for this season, and they won a Coastal Division. They got to play for the ACC Championship. They were in playoff talk all the way up to that game against Clemson. You bring so many of those guys back, they've already experienced it. They've got Trubisky stepping in, who they know is supposed to be as talented as he has played. Obviously, their expectations are going to be very high. They want to feel those same highs. They want to feel those same emotions. And then when you have these losses that they don't think they should have suffered, you know, say what you want about the Hurricane game, or you have this Duke loss here, of course they're going to feel bummed out, because everything that they've wanted to have accomplished this season, it has gone out the window. That's what they all were expecting to come back and play for together.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, with all that being said, this team could win 10 games.
Yeah, that's something to say.
So they could go 10-3 if they win out against the Citadel, NC State on Black Friday, and then go to some slot bowl game and win that. I mean, the worst case scenario is they drop a game to NC State.
Yeah,
NC State comes out and they have a kind of a weird season where they are so close to so many games and then beat their rival and Dave Doran's back and everything. But, their main goal is to go to the ACC Championship game. That didn't happen.
Right. And 10 wins and all that is still great. But, it's 10. It's very different than the way that it looked like it was going to play out. Even if you don't make the conference championship game, going to a higher tier bowl game, like you said, now target set on just whatever bowl they're going to get into. It's not going to be a fantastic opponent or game. And you've got two wins on that schedule. You know, just call it what it is. They're good FCS teams, but they're FCS teams. It just doesn't have quite the same momentum going forward. But
yeah, and it sucks because after that 11-3 season, the momentum, the fan base, this excitement around this team was so high. They had to do really well this year to keep that momentum going, to pack Heinz Stadium, to get recruiting better, and it is now, it kind of takes a spin. Basketball season starts, segue, and even the media and fans are already moving to that. They're playing in Maui next week, talking about basketball, and they have big games coming up against Indiana, Kentucky, and completely the attention of the fan base, the media, turns to basketball.
Speaking of, let's turn to basketball here. We have got a season underway now for the Tar Heel basketball team, and they are off to quite a start. It was signing day as well, the early signing period for the basketball team, which something I think they should institute for football as well, but we can talk about that another day. But we'll talk about all those happenings, and we will talk a little more football toward the end of the program as Carolina's getting ready for that matchup with the Citadel on Saturday. This is Tar Heel Talk on WCHL. Welcome back into Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL, streaming at chapelboro.com. Blake Hodge alongside Ross Martin, and WCHL's own Avery Trindle in with us this week. We are underway with a basketball season right now that is off to a really hot start. Ross, they're 3-0 now on the season. What are you seeing from this team so far? Obviously, they're not in one of these tournaments so far in the season. They're going to Maui, but they haven't played, you know, another top-tier team. They have played a couple of teams projected to win their divisions, their conferences in Chattanooga and Long Beach State. So what have you seen so far from the Tar Heel basketball team?
I think it's as expected. Like, you know, you go into the season with a lot of confidence. You think it's going to be a good team, and they've lived up to expectations. They haven't disappointed. I think the things we talked about before the season started are coming true. Joel Berry stepping into a leadership role and really taking over for this team has been huge. He's averaging 21.3 points, I believe, in three games. Really, the second half of last night's game or Tuesday night's game was great. And then Meeks, I think, is playing really solid, and what UNC needs from him. Isaiah Hicks has been pretty good, and Justin Jackson is kind of stepping up as well. And you see what the freshmen are doing, and it's kind of all coming together. It doesn't seem like this team – it seems like it's almost like they're 10 or 15 games in. They're playing very well together. Yeah. There's a lot of chemistry, and that's what you get when you start three seniors and two juniors, and you're seeing that chemistry on offense and defense, and then you have a couple of playmakers and get things done, given the competition is pretty low. But I think as a Tar Heel fan, you have to be pretty encouraged what you're seeing now, and you just kind of want to see how they play against tougher competition in Maui and then in against Indiana, Tennessee, and then Kentucky in December.
I think Joel Berry this year, you know, obviously he's been a great player. I think this year he's taken that step where you can legitimately consider him a National Player of the Year candidate. You know, I know he was on the, you know, the Wooden Award watch list or whatever, but he's going to continue getting that type of recognition if he's going to continue putting up these stat lines where he's averaging, like Ross said, over 21 points, and nearly 6 rebounds, a little under 5 assists per game. Those are not easy numbers for an NBA player to put up who's got 48 minutes, let alone a college player where Roy Williams is playing him, you know, 25 minutes a game right now against this lesser competition. And he's really showing that he can do it both from the perimeter, he can create for other guys, he can guard all the way up the floor. You know, we were talking to Seventh Woods, you know, the freshman guard after the game, the home opener against Chattanooga, and Seventh said that Joel Berry's the most aggressive player he's ever played against in practice. And I think that shows on the court with the way that he is coming at other teams and kind of forcing turnovers.
I think Berry, I mean, he's better than Marcus Paige. And that's weird to say because Marcus was so good, and you look at what he did and his three-point shooting, but
In terms of just ability on the basketball court to get things done, I think that that's a very fair statement.
I think Marcus was so good his sophomore year, and he was such a good three-point shooter. He was so fluid and smooth, but I think Paige just has like something different, maybe just athleticism or speed or just a toughness in the lane that you have to like that. So it was great last year with both of them on the court, but now he's really stepping into a role, and he's obviously having more opportunities. He set his 23 points in two games, which is a career high. That's really great to see. Avery, any surprises from you in terms of certain players you've seen that you weren't sure were going to be good or?
Yeah, the biggest surprise for sure to me is Kenny Williams. Now, I know that maybe long-term people don't have maybe high expectations when we play higher competition, but from last year he came in, he had this reputation as a shooter, didn't really see much from him, didn't get a lot of playing time, only hit one three-pointer. Then he's come out this year, he's made some threes, but he's also been really, really active on defense, been able to kind of get in the lane, bother stuff for opposing offenses and really diving on the floor, making lots of hustle plays. And I've really been surprised to see that because I did not expect to see a lot from him this year. Kind of expected Brandon Robinson to get a little bit more minutes and take over that role.
Yeah,
Robinson's been out.
And Kenny's going to have to step up. And he hasn't like burst onto the screen with what he does. And defense, you don't really know how good he is on there. But he has been really quick on there. And you want to see him score a little more. I want to see him shoot and get on we haven't seen a player yet that's knocked down two or three threes in a row. A couple guys have shot out three here and there. Brandon Robinson's hit, I think, two or three this season, which is good to see there. I like what Meeks is doing. I don't know. Last year, I think a lot of people were down on him, especially in the championship game and a couple of the NCAA games. But I think he's been really solid and his rebounding, and he seems a little quicker. And I've wrote about this twice, actually. His interior post moves have been really impressive, kind of not wasting time, really making one move and going to the basket, which has been kind of a struggle for him. And I really think what he does inside, averaging maybe a close to double-double, is going to be huge for this UNC team as long as he keeps it consistent, because behind him, you have Hicks and Bradley who can score and can get it done inside.
And it's funny, I think that quickness may be a little more apparent to Isaiah Hicks than it is in real life, because Isaiah tried to throw him an alley-oop against Long Beach State that didn't really go very well. Isaiah trying to throw one up, maybe just showing some encouragement there for the big man down low. But I think the biggest thing for Kennedy, you hit on it, Ross, is the biggest void maybe that they lost with Bryce Johnson, certainly scoring and just length and athleticism and the way he ran the floor and all that. just grabbing rebounds. There's just so many that are left now with the void that Bryce Johnson left for the Tar Heels. I mean, the best rebounder in the league last year. And you've seen a few guys pick up on that. Kennedy Meeks being one of them in double-digit rebounds so far this season. But also Justin Jackson, even playing a little more at the four, which have you been surprised at this small ball lineup?
Well, I mean, Luke May's injured. So they have three legitimate big men now. And Luke May may not be back for 2-3 weeks. Roy was pretty certain he's not going to play in Hawaii, which is going to be the next week's games. So they went small for long stretches with, it was mostly Seventh Woods, Kenny Williams, Brandon Robinson, Justin Jackson, and then a big, either Kennedy Meeks or Tony Bradley. So they're going small and having Justin Jackson play the four position. And he had 10 rebounds last night, scored a double-double. So he's had a step up in rebounding, and I agree. And then Bradley's a pretty decent rebounder as well.
He's long, man. He just I don't know if it's because he's thin or, you know, because he's a freshman or whatever it is. He just looks super long.
7'5" wingspan. That's what that is.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah, he's huge.
that is no joke.
He just absolutely is long.
That's the type of thing that gets Jay Billis very excited on draft night.
He's I mean, Kenny Meeks is listed as 6'10", 6'9", but Bradley's legitimate 6'10", 6'11". He's huge. I really like what he's done. He's averaging he scored double digits each game. And what I was going to touch on. The small lineup. Yeah, and with that small lineup, they have so much length in there because you have Kenny Williams at 6'4". Right. You have Brandon Robinson at 6'6", super long. Justin Jackson, you know, is 6'8". He's just so slight, and then you have a big man in there. So
that's
it's a weird lineup.
Missing a guy like Theo, though, in the general lineup, because you're not going to be able to play Brandon and Kenny and some of those guys at the two for long stretches of time because of some of the liabilities that they have that Theo just didn't have. And I think that's one of the areas where that injury is going to be really big in that, specifically the non-conference game.
Yeah, and we talked about this before the show. I think this team will miss Theo Pinson when you go against different competition. He's just kind of a next-level athlete. He's more comfortable. He's fast. He's bigger than a Kenny Williams or a Nate Britt. I mean, Nate Britt's 6'2". And pretty slight, and Theo Pinson's 6'6", and pretty sturdy and athletic. And when they go against these higher-level teams with five-star freshmen, they're going to need a guy like Kenny, a guy like Theo Pinson out there. Have you noticed anything in terms of missing him yet?
As far as missing Pinson yet, I don't think it's really been as evident just because they have been such blowout victories where they've kind of let off the gas. Like you saw the second half yesterday, you're up 25 at halftime. I felt like they kind of just, kind of we're going on cruise control for a little bit and let Long Beach come back. You may have a guy like Pinson in there to keep the intensity up or maybe to motivate, but I just don't think on the floor they've really felt it. I agree with you when you say that they're really going to feel it more against tougher competition where you need Pinson out there on some of these tougher players to guard. You know, I think that's where they're going to miss him the most is defensively. I think they have enough offensive talent. They have people that can score the ball. It's just going to be on defense when you need somebody to lock down the other person's or the other team's best perimeter player if Barry's, you know, locked up on the point guard up top.
Yeah, and I really like what Pinson does in transition and the way he passes. I think he's one of UNC's best passers. Talk about what he can do in a small lineup and guard four positions. So we'll see in Maui and against Indiana, Kentucky, how much they miss Pinson. And, you know, hopefully he can get back ACC time. If not, who knows what happens in terms of redshirt.
That would be great to be able to get him back into the season. That's another, that's going to be a really interesting development, what you just mentioned with the redshirt, of how far into the season do you get before you say, we're just going to hold you out all season, or else, you know, we're, you know, as a team still in the thick of it as far as the ACC goes, and maybe some of these other teams that are highly ranked going into the season relying on freshmen aren't playing up to the caliber that they thought they were, and it changes Carolina from being a top 10 team, a team people think can make it to the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight, back into maybe a little more of the forefront of the national championship conversation. I think that's going to be a really interesting decision.
Yeah, the redshirt issue, and who knows when he's going to come back, but you think about back to a while ago, Tyler Zeller, you know, missed almost an entire season and came back a couple games before the ACC tournament. It really was a non-factor, and he kind of wasted a whole year of eligibility. Next year would be great to have, you know, have an extra year for Theo Pinson would be great, but if they could use him for ACC play, you definitely want to play him.
So we'll see how that goes. We'll have a little more of a conversation about those next few games whenever we do expect competition to stiffen up a little bit for the Tar Heels as they are heading out to Hawaii. They'll have a game against Hawaii initially, and then heading on to the Maui Invitational, which is always a star-studded field, and we'll hear a little more
about the next incoming class of Tar Heels as well whenever we continue here on Tar Heel Talk on WCHL. Welcome back into Tar Heel Talk on WCHL. Blake Hodge alongside Ross Martin. As always, this week, just absolutely honored to have WCHL's Avery Trindle in with us, hanging out for a little while, talking Tar Heel football and, of course, the basketball season underway. We've talked just a few minutes ago about some of the games so far this season and what everybody has seen up to this point, the development of some of those freshmen, although Seventh Woods, who's been battling some injuries and maybe hasn't lived up to some of the hype that's been surrounding him since he was 14. Roy is still apparently not calling him Seventh, Sixth, or Eighth Woods so far. This is something that Roy has deployed a few times during his tenure at Carolina. I remember Marcus Ginyard was at Chapel Hill, and everybody called him Ginyard at the beginning of the season because that's what the name looks like, and then he was trying to tell everybody, no, it's Ginyard. And Roy wouldn't adopt that until Ginyard was playing at a little bit higher level that he wanted to see him at. I believe he did the same thing with Reggie Bullock instead of calling him Bullock at the beginning of the year. So Seventh's got to earn that, I guess.
Yeah, it was a really funny quote. He asked him about Seventh. He said, I'm not calling him Seventh because he's not the player that I recruited, which is kind of like a shot at him. I mean, he's no longer a prospect. He's a UNC player, so really can kind of do what he wants to say. And then I think you spoke with Seventh after the game, right?
Right, and he even admitted that, yeah, Roy is calling him Sixth or Eighth in practice. That is no joke. That is not just a euphemism that Roy is saying to the media just to, you know, deflect a question. That is a true story.
And Seventh, when I talked to him, he told me that he's 85% health-wise. Yeah, I think he's still dealing with some injuries he had this summer.
But he came in with so much hype that really started with that mixtape when he was 14, which is unfair, really. But a guy that Roy recruited for a long time.
Yeah, and in three games in, there's no need for people to jump on him. He had six assists last night, looked okay. I'm sure he'll be all right.
I think that's one of the reasons for the prodding, though, is that he hasn't been a big detriment to the team so far, and Roy knows that he can get a lot more out of him. Before we talk about the upcoming games for this edition of the Tar Heels, we do want to hit a little bit about signing day and a little, you know, shout out college basketball here for having the early signing day, so you can go ahead and get this out of the way. Football does not have that. Everything comes in on that one day in February. But Ross, what are we going to see from this four-man class?
Yeah, so the star of this class, it signed different points last week during the period, is Jaleek Felton, obviously the nephew of Raymond Felton. He's a top 25 player. We have him ranked number 26. He's the number one combo guard from South Carolina. Really dynamic player. Really kind of raved about him and what he can bring offensively. He can shoot the ball. He's gonna be sick in transition. He's really athletic, very quick, and dynamic player there. So I think he's kind of the best player who will contribute the most next year. Mm-hmm. When you think about a backcourt with Barry, Jaleek, Seventh Woods, depending on what happens with certain players. Behind him is a shooting guard, Andrew Platik from Massachusetts, signed or committed in the summer. 6'4" guy from the north up there. He's number, we have him in the 24/7 Sports composite ranking at number 220. So pretty far back, three-star guy. Roy talked about his grit, his toughness, his IQ. He's coming in with a reputation as a shooter. As we know, you come with a reputation, it kind of stays with you throughout your, you know, early career, because, you know, Kenny Williams came as a shooter and he made 1-3 his freshman year. So really a guy that Roy liked, just saw him play, really liked his toughness, and offered him, and it didn't take long for him to commit after a few visits. Behind him, you have a 6'9 center, Brandon Huffman, out of Word of God Academy, Christian Academy in Raleigh. His parents live in Alaska. And I went over and talked to him. Great kid, really tall. I think fans will really like him personality-wise, very outgoing, very friendly. He dunks everything. We talked about this before the game. He's kind of that guy who just gets the ball inside, someone dishes it to him, and he dunks it. He's playing with a really good point guard on his team, a kid that's committed to Washington. And he's just a big dude, kind of like Brennan Haywood, someone that's just a big body inside, not as big as Haywood, but a player that's going to be probably a 3-4 year Play for UNC. And then Sterling Manley, interesting recruitment there. The recruitment lasted like a month. They needed a player. They liked what they saw of him. Coach Steve Robinson went and visited him. Roy went up and visited him in an open gym. And then he committed on his official visit to UNC. 6'10", a little bit more mobile, power forward, center. Another guy that seems to be just a, kind of an interior player with a couple moves there. And the funny thing about him, well, it's not funny, he broke he broke his right leg and then he broke his left leg all during one basketball season. So he didn't have any junior AAU tape. His only his tapes from his sophomore year in high school and then these open gyms he's been doing. He really missed a whole high school season and a whole AAU season, which really affects your recruitment. Yeah. But he had about 20 or so offers and a talented kid. But who knows with these two big men, there's a lot of potential there. That's the key word.
Roy loves to have those multiple big guys that he's able to rotate through. And these certainly seem like guys that he would probably deem as more of a project player if you were going to be 3 or 4 year guys. But just from the tapes that they sent out yesterday, neither of them appeared particularly smooth with anything they were doing outside of 3 feet away from the basket. But if they were within 3 feet, you knew exactly what they were going to do, Avery, from watching those. And that was just dunk it as hard as they possibly could.
Absolutely.
It's not the worst thing in the world.
That's what they do. And with, UNC is going to be losing Isaiah Hicks, Kennedy Meeks in the offseason. They're already kind of thin in the front court. Who knows what's going to be expected of these guys when they get on campus? Right. I know they don't have very, high rankings. There's a very real possibility that they might see some time.
It's a great point. I mean, they're losing Hicks and losing Meeks. And right now they have Luke May and Tony Bradley. So you have two guys that come in, and you're either going to start Luke May or start one of these guys, these three-star big men, Brandon Huffman and Sterling Manley. So, I mean, you could talk for hours about UNC basketball recruiting and how it's changed over the last couple of years with the NCAA cloud and Roy's inability to land these top elite players. I mean, I remember when they got Ty Lawson, Wayne Ellington, Brandon Wright, and then before that, John Henson, and they were like the top players in their class, top 10 guys, Harrison Barnes. That's just not happening anymore.
Right.
I mean,
the rumor always was also that Ty and Kevin Durant they were buddies growing up and had planned to commit to Carolina on the same day, but there were some academic things that were maybe getting in the way of Kevin being able to do it, and he ends up committing to Texas. But like to be able to potentially even roll that out on the same day of at that point Ty and Kevin committing on the same day, it shows certainly the changes that we've seen.
But, yeah, I mean, even Marcus Page's class with Page, Tokoto, Bryce Johnson and Joel James, that class was not that great. It panned out because you had Paige and Bryce who developed over 4 years, and that's kind of the strategy Roy's taking now. He's not landing these five-star guys, so he's getting good character, solid guys that are going to stay 3-4 years, like Joel Berry, Theo Pinson, Justin Jackson. That was a pretty good class, and they all stayed 3 years. And even this most recent class is pretty good with Tony Bradley, Seventh Woods, Brad Robinson. That was a class that Roy kind of pulled out of the hat.
He came out of nowhere.
Which will be good, and most of those, I think all those guys will stay at least 3-4 years, even though some people are thinking that Bradley will be a guy
that can
leave
early. The way that he's played so far, I don't know about his personality, what he would like to do, but he's got all of the things that you can see NBA guys drooling over.
Yeah, absolutely. I would point to Tony Bradley as probably being the biggest, I wouldn't say surprise, but probably the most helpful thing emergence that UNC has seen this season, because they needed some length, they needed some rebounding to replace what Bryce Johnson, left when he graduated. And Luke May, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but he doesn't bring that to the table. He's 6'8", and Bradley, when you see him in there, he has this natural like aura about him. You see how big he is. He stands next to other guys, and you're like, wow.
That's a big dude.
That's a basketball player right there. He can he's made a few and ones in like each of these games. He's relentless on the boards. Just the way he finishes, you can tell he's going to be a big-time player.
Yeah, especially as he puts a little weight on as well.
Yeah, and he's the tallest guy on UNC's team. He's huge. He's long. And talking to him after the game, I mean, he is the quietest, most soft-spoken player. It's incredible. Even in Seventh Woods as well, they're quiet freshmen, kind of adjusting to this media thing. All of a sudden you have 25 guys in there with voice recorders in your face and video cameras, and it's kind of a big change. So it was funny seeing how these kids respond to that.
And they're
attention.
Not allowed to talk until after the first game.
Yeah.
So there's a learning on the fly here.
Yeah, to summarize this class, we got Felton, Huffman, Platik, and Manley. Right now it's ranked, I think we have it, 24/7 Sports has it as the number 22 class in the nation, the number 3 class in the ACC. You know, UNC is usually top 10, top 5 classes. You can see, I mean, there's only one player ranked in the top 50. The rest are 193 or above. There's been a huge shift in the level of talent UNC can attract. It's just, it's so surprising for UNC fans. It's become the accepted norm. They needed big men, so they had to take big men. So they took these guys who were ranked pretty way back in the rankings. And
I found it interesting myself. Looking back at some of their previous recruiting classes, you brought up the one with Paige and Tokoto and everything. As a sophomore in high school, JP Tokoto was ranked by like Scout.com, places like that, as the top recruit in the nation when Roe was going after him. And so it was like a big deal when he came. But as he...
Tokoto
was getting comparisons as a sophomore. Bob Gibbons, he's a big recruiting guy, was comparing Tokoto to Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, I remember.
And then you see how he panned out. Even before he got to UNC, it was like, okay, well, his jumper's not developing. He's not going to be quite the same player. But he was a big-time get at the time.
And on the converse of that, a guy like Bryce Johnson that comes in and just develops over 4 years, and I think that's what Roy is going to shoot for here with some of these big guys that are coming in, certainly. But we have got more to talk about here on Tar Heel Talk. We'll kind of preview the next few days here of Carolina Athletics. Shout out to some of the Olympic sports as they've got big games coming up here over the next few days, but also Carolina football against the Citadel and Carolina basketball heading out to Hawaii to take on Hawaii. And then participate in the Maui Invitational. All coming up as we wrap up Tar Heel Talk on WCHL. Welcome into the final segment here of Tar Heel Talk on WCHL. Blake Hodge alongside Ross Martin from 24/7 Sports over at Carolina Blue, and WCHL's Avery Trindle in with us this week. We've been talking a lot about what we've seen from the basketball team so far, and of course, that signing day passing over the last week where we got a look at some of the new guys coming into Carolina. Of course, that's not until next year. One thing that everybody was saying earlier was that Carolina is going to find out a lot more about what the team has going on this year as that competition level rises a little bit, and that is certainly going to happen with this trip out to Hawaii. Of course, they are going to take on Hawaii. This is a weird thing going on. So it's technically Saturday morning. It's a 1 a.m. tip-off on Saturday morning, facing off against Hawaii, and then they're going to be taking on Chaminade in the first round of the Maui Invitational. Chaminade, of course, the host there of the Maui Invitational, but always a big surprise if they get a win out there as a lower tier school. But then Connecticut, Oklahoma State, Georgetown, Oregon, Tennessee, Wisconsin, some of the other teams out there at the Maui Invitational. Connecticut's had a really rough start to the year, but Ross, as you look over the rest of that schedule out there, is there a matchup that you're just hoping for to see out of this tournament to get a good gauge of the Tar Heels?
I mean, the teams they could play are Connecticut and Oklahoma State, and then if they win that game, this is if they beat Chaminade, is Georgetown, Oregon, Tennessee, or Wisconsin. Oregon's a pretty highly ranked team there, and Georgetown as well. I don't think Tennessee's that good. I mean, Chattanooga, boat race, Tennessee. And Wisconsin, which is always pretty solid. So there's some good teams, there's good competition out there. I think UNC would probably be the highest-ranked team, the most talented team out there. But a game against Oregon would be cool. You just want to see them against these Power 5 conference teams and see how they go against players of their caliber with more athleticism. I mean, these teams they played the last couple days of just a different level of talent you can't really compare.
Yeah, I think a game against either Wisconsin or Oregon, both of them were ranked in the top 10 this week. Oregon obviously took a loss to Baylor the other day, but they've been playing without one of their best players, Dylan Brooks, the guy who had the whole run-in with Coach K in the NCAA tournament last year. So I would think a matchup with Wisconsin would almost be, it would be really interesting to see, just because it's always a very disciplined team. They always make you, they force you into beating them. They're not going to beat themselves. And so it'd be nice to see what it looks like when UNC takes on a team like that's going to try and slow the pace down a little bit, so to speak.
Yeah, shout out to Avery. I had no idea that Oregon and Wisconsin were top 10 teams. That's a lack of research on my part. But so that's turned into a great, those are some great big names out there. I mean, Oregon's ranked number 4 right now ahead of North Carolina in the AP poll. So that's pretty cool. What you want to see out of this is you want to see the team win. You want to see UNC win. You want to have that trip with all the chemistry. Roy talked about that yesterday after the game on against Long Beach State. you want to see them come out and play at a high level against these teams and enjoy their trip and then come back and roll into some bigger non-conference games.
And they've always done well whenever they've gone to Maui, or else done well in a season whenever they did well going to Maui. It's not something that Carolina goes to every year, of course, but looking at the past, they've had really strong seasons the years that they've gone out, competed well, and played against that higher competition there at the Maui Invitational. And it doesn't get any easier coming off of that. And then they immediately go to Bloomington to take on the Hoosiers up there in Indiana. It's part of the ACC Big Ten Challenge. That's on November 30th. Jeff Goodman tweeted earlier today that he thought Indiana had been the best team in the country so far. He said he might put them at number one in the power rankings. Of course, that's all coming after Duke lost to Kansas on Tuesday night. But there's some big-time opponents coming up here for the Tar Heels.
Yeah, and Indiana actually beat Kansas in their opening game there, and then Kansas went and lost to a very good Duke team. So, I mean, Jeff Gibbons' tweet there is pretty fantastic, and it's in Bloomington. So that's kind of the first big test. I mean, if they play Wisconsin or Oregon, that'll also be a top-10 matchup there. So some awesome games for UNC fans over the Thanksgiving holiday. It's important to note that UNC plays Friday night, Saturday morning against Hawaii in Honolulu. The game's at 8 p.m. local time in the tropical islands of Hawaii, but here it's at 1 a.m. and it's only on Time Warner Cable locally. That's the point. Like, I don't even have Time Warner Cable, so I can't even watch it.
It's also on WCHL, so you'll be able to listen.
It's on radio as well. So you can start your tailgating early for the Citadel game.
Oh, yeah,
Segue.
You can just make a long day out of it.
Yeah,
you
can start doing what you do tailgating-wise, watching that game at 1 a.m. It's on Time Warner Cable, channel 77 or 323, or WCHL.
Or WCHL. We always have to that end. So, and then that game against the Citadel has a lot going on because if Carolina completely just goes into the tank and says, you know, we're done with this season after that Duke loss, and they end up losing to the Citadel or something, then you're going into almost crisis management time for the program as a whole for Larry Fedora, and maybe some of these other jobs that are going to end up opening up look a little more attractive. But if they are able to kind of right the ship against the Citadel, it's not going to be an easy game. The Citadel is very good. They are from the FCS level, but just like James Madison, they're a highly rated FCS team. I believe they're sixth in the country right now at that level. They're undefeated on the season. And, you know, they just played Georgia Tech a couple of weeks ago, Carolina did. But it's another of these quirky offenses. It's this, the wing T triple option offense that is just difficult to play against because you don't do it on a regular basis, Avery. So whenever you're, what are you looking for from the defense specifically after getting that zone option run all over by the quarterback from Duke? What do they need to prove to say they're back on the right track?
I mean, not to sound too much like Larry Fedora or any of the other coaches, but it's really going to be about creating a turnover, stealing possessions, because I think what we've seen is that the UNC defense is going to give up rushing yards, especially against a system like that where they're going to keep, you know, kind of slamming it down your throat. It's going to be about how many turnovers can they create, and can they open up a big lead early and kind of force the Citadel into maybe passing a little bit more than they'd like to do, or just kind of getting away from their normal flow of how they like to do things.
And like Gene Chizik said before the Dorsett game, this offense, this triple option wing T offense, is the great equalizer. You know, it gives teams that may not have that much talent, it's so tricky. If they do it right, hit the right blocks, it can really help. And yeah, UNC has been able have given up a lot of rushing yards. You never know what's going to happen there. And you look at their schedule, I mean, you don't know how good these teams are that they beat.
Right.
Who knows how good Mercer or Furman or Western Carolina is. So it's kind of hard to see how good they are. But Citadel's undefeated. It's a 3:30 kick. You know, UNC's coming off a big loss. They need to get this win out of the way and then get ready for Black Friday's game against NC State, which is obviously a huge game. And NC State having nothing to lose in that contest.
Except maybe Dave Doran.
Yeah.
Right. And that the Citadel offense, like historically, the Citadel has never been a great football program at all. Mm. But they instituted this triple option a couple years ago with a head coach. His name is Mike Houston. Ironically enough, this guy left the Citadel after this past season, went to James Madison, who UNC has already, you know, seen with a very heavy running attack. And then now that they've kept the same system because it's brought them success.
Right.
You know, they won their conference the first time in ages last year, and then they're undefeated this season. And so they've really, really kind of perfected this over the past few years and worked it to their advantage.
Avery, do you have a favorite Citadel alum?
Yes, my father.
Do you have a favorite Citadel alum, Blake?
Avery's father.
Mine is Frank Underwood. It's a little pop culture tidbit for you there.
Oh, is that what that is? We're going to end it on that. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us for a little while. We have got a big week of Tar Heel Athletics coming up here. The football program here at home, Chapel Hill, Saturday afternoon against the Citadel. And then heading out to the Maui Invitational. Find out what we've got coming from the basketball team here. Coming up, of course, we'll talk about all that next week on Tar Heel Talk here on WCHL. From Avery Trindle, you can find all of his work over at chapelboro.com. And here on WCHL, Ross Martin over at 24/7 Sports, carolinablue.com. I'm Blake Hodge. This is Tar Heel Talk.